Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with a wonderful guest who is extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing what 20 senior multifamily executives say about how COVID will change the industry. Joining me today in the studio is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and an expert on revenue management and marketing, Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. Dom, it's always great to have you here in the studio with us.
Yeah, and it's particularly good to be back in a studio in person.
Yes, it's been a while. It's been a while. And you had indicated that on the last show you were listening to it that you were on, and you were joking about, you didn't know if they were going to have conferences and so forth. But sure enough, I don't know if you were looking at a crystal ball or what was happening there.
Certainly feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things about having you on and also the principal with D2 Demand Solutions, Donald Davidoff, who's not on today but has been on in the past with us, is that you guys really kind of bring the receipts. You do a lot of research, and you do a study, I'll say questionnaire. It's probably not correct way of terming it, but you actually have conversations with 20 executives in the industry, and you put a report out every year, 20 for 20, and mm-hmm. it really is insightful. Of course, this year the report was really kind of bracketed around the COVID and the pandemic situation. So tell us a little bit about what goes into creating that report, what you guys do, and then putting it all together. Let's talk about what we found.
Yeah. So generally, this is the third year now that we've done this. We, at the end of each of the last 3 years, we've interviewed 20 senior leaders. So it's 10 chief operating officers and 10 heads of technology. And the idea is we're trying to understand what's changing about the way we run operations, and what's changing about the way people are prioritizing technology. We know there's tons and tons of new prop tech out there. And there's tons of places you can go to go learn about it. But the gap that we saw a few years ago was just something that kind of cuts through it all a little bit and tries to crystallize what people are really focused on and what they did in the last year and what they're doing in the following year. The more we've done this, you get to have this sort of year over year perspective that I'm sure we'll come on to talk about as we go through some of the findings, where, you know, if at the end of 2019 we ask people what they're planning to do in 2020, and then at the end of 2020 we ask them what they did, that really throws a bright light on what changed.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of thing that we're really trying to get to. We use mostly the same. We typically keep half of the same interviewees and introduce 10 new ones each year, just to sort of keep some continuity while also freshening things up a bit. Like you said, this year it was very obvious to us that the operational impact of COVID was so great that we sort of changed the survey. I mean, you say questionnaire. It is actually a sort of survey that we do. We want the conversations to be free form, but we also want them to be structured enough that we can draw some conclusions from them. So we sort of cut out everything that we didn't think was impacted by COVID. We sort of focused on the areas that intuitively we thought would have changed a lot in 2020. And that's kind of what's led us to where we are.
Yeah. And I know the one of the major things that that we all experienced in the industry, and of course your report has highlighted that, is that COVID really stress tested the operations. Tell us a little bit about what you found out about that.
Yeah, well, so it did provide this impromptu and pretty rigorous stress test for lots of aspects of operations. And that there are already five things specifically relating to that that we call out from the interviews. I mean, the first thing and the thing we heard the most frequently, particularly from the operators, was that it was like people kind of underestimated just how much more stressful the situation was for frontline workers than it was for everyone else. Because if you think back to a year ago when we were joking about conferences in the studio, everyone's world was then turned upside down a bit, right? We all went to these sort of working from home arrangements. Everyone had to figure out how to do everything virtually and so on. But it's so much harder to do that if you have to physically be in a building. If you can't, you can't be a you know, a community manager and work from home. Like, you have to do stuff in person, and you know, you're having to keep yourself safe. You, if you remember a year ago, nobody quite knew how infectious this thing was. It was quite a lot scarier than it is looking at it today. We had you have to keep yourself safe, you have to keep your residents safe, and of course in many cases you've got things like, because schools have closed, you've got childcare arrangements that you suddenly have to figure out. And so that, you know, concatenation of stuff led to a lot of stress on frontline workers, and lots of the operational leaders that, that we spoke to said that they had to just really rethink and reiterate the way that they communicated, the way that they collaborated with site teams to reflect that.
Yeah, and I know one of the things that, and full disclosure, in the last year, obviously almost every episode we've, every weekly episode we've done of this show has in some way touched on or been about the pandemic and the industry and so forth. But one of the common themes that I heard from some of the people that were on our show was how important communication was, and the fact that that it was frustrating to their teams on site because they would make a some type of a pronouncement of this is how we're going to do things. And then all of a sudden, something changed because the nobody knew how to work within this pandemic. And it was a constantly changing landscape of communication. So communication, the ones I think that I've spoken with that have been most successful on the on dealing with this were the most transparent with their communication. So
definitely. And the one thing, one thing I didn't mention before, in terms of transparency of communication, think about fee managers who not only have to figure out how to collaborate and communicate differently with their site teams, they've also got external owners. Like if you've got to make decisions about opening and closing amenities, for example, that means every decision that you make, you've got to manage stakeholders through it as well. So there's a really broad range of different things you have to communicate differently.
Lots of layers to, to deal with. One of the things that the report showed was that the pandemic did not affect cybersecurity as much as people would think. What did you find with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe that was a bit of a prior that we had going into this, but the we'd read the NMHC 111 report that had come out in November, where it's clear that cybersecurity is the highest priority according to the respondents there. Intuitively, you just think if you're going to this virtual kind of organization, that that's going to stress, and you've got all people working from home in your communities, that's going to stress your sort of cybersecurity infrastructure. Generally, what we found was that most people, with a few exceptions, most people, because they have pretty rigorous standards imposed on them by, for example, capital partners, they found that the cybersecurity provisions that they were already undertaking were up to the task. I mean, there are some exceptions to that. Like some people with city center high-rise communities have found the number of attempted attacks have gone through the roof just because, again, you've got all these targets sitting in these buildings.
Sure.
But generally, most people felt that their cybersecurity was up to the job.
All right. And what about the fact of the big platform and the vendors, the big platform vendors? What'd you find with that?
Well, there was a, we'll come on to talk about this in a bit more detail shortly. But the I guess the headline is that people have seen very different ways that they want to do things like leasing, which means they want to move quickly. If you're a big platform, if you're a big operator, you want to move fast on changing stuff. if you're trying to get a really large organization like a PMS vendor to move at the pace that you want them to, they've found that that's very difficult right now. And we'll come on to talk a little bit more in a little bit more detail about that when we talk about leasing.
All right, we've got about a minute. No, we've got about 30 seconds left. So we're going to go ahead and break it here. We're going to be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we're back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of what 20 senior multifamily executives say about how COVID has changed the industry. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today in the studio is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and an expert on revenue management and marketing, Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. Before we get back into the conversation, I do want to let our listeners know if you'd like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. We got a little rushed at the end of the last segment, Dom. I wanted to ask you if there's anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to cover before we jump to the next section.
Yeah, just on technology, there were a couple of silver linings out there. The virtual environment got a few technology projects, like long-running technology projects, over the hump in terms of adoption. Like it's often the case that we create and we roll out technology solutions and not enough people use them. Well, a couple of really good examples of projects like that really gained much faster traction than they had before. Business intelligence at a corporate level. Like we heard from companies who were all of a sudden, because everyone was working from home and they needed data right here, right now, that suddenly meant that the adoption that they've been pushing for years, often for business intelligence, suddenly arrived. So mm-hmm. so that was a positive. The other thing is an area like electronic payments, right? So mm-hmm. lots of companies, probably most companies, are at some stage of trying to get paperless with payments, but residents get a vote, right? There are still some that want to bring their check to the office. And when you get to mandate contactless payments for a few months, that gets you over the hump again of being able to go paperless with billing. So that was those were a couple of things that were good and legacies that will hopefully linger. And the final thing I'd say was there was a very, very strong sense this year from operators in particular, the focus of 2021 was going to be operating efficiencies, and there's several of those that we'll come on to talk about as we go through. But obviously people want to get back to pre-pandemic performance levels, and also there are some things that people have discovered that they can do that they didn't realize they could before this all started.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about something that that I know is we've discussed on episodes before with you, and that's AI. How is the pandemic changed the thinking about AI in the industry?
Yeah, it's changed in a lot of different ways. And this is a really good example of that thing I was talking about earlier, where you get to compare what people said 12 months ago versus what they're saying now.
And let me just say, AI, for those who don't know, is artificial intelligence. So
yes,
okay,
yeah, that's right. And in particular, the area we're interested in is leasing. So having a robot effectively take over the leasing conversation, between initial contact and booking a tour. That's the area that we're most interested in, because a year ago, we had a very strong sense that this was that technology was going to have a huge year in 2020. Excuse me. Enough people were talking about it. There was a really solid business case behind it. You had multiple viable technology vendors in the space. Just everything looked set for that to be a sort of mass adoption technology in 2020. And it's certainly grown, right? There are much more companies that are doing this or planning to do this at the time of these interviews than there were a year ago. But it probably didn't move quite as quickly as we expected it to. Now, part of that is to do with the other priorities taking over. Like if you think about the reality of a multifamily operation, if you've suddenly got to figure out self-show, which everybody had to do, that's going to take priority over making the contact process more efficient. So there was a composition of priorities there. But the other thing was, we think the way that people view people in this has changed, and I'll tell you a few things about this. A year ago, when we were talking to people about changes to the leasing process, the discussion was very much about fully automated leasing. People were thinking about this in terms of, how do I automate these tasks? So the combination of AI and self-show, and access control, and smart building, this kind of stuff. People were really thinking about, how do I automate tasks out of the leasing process. 1 year later, they're talking about it differently. They're using words like they're using words like contactless leasing or self-serve leasing. They're using terms that are much more about the experience of the person that's doing the leasing, rather than how I automate the tasks that deliver it, which is a subtle but quite an important thing, because it doesn't seem like people are quite as focused on, how do I automate tasks and ultimately roles out of my business. They're thinking much more in terms of, how do I deliver this experience that we know that people now want. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that sort of interested us. The other thing is, when the pandemic really started, people immediately had to offer self-show. They had to offer virtual tours, as well as agent guided tours. And what you found at the start was that everybody who was offered a choice of those three things opted for either a virtual tour or a self-guided tour. Right. And which is intuitive. Like, if you've got the opportunity to do something yourself versus meet a salesperson to go do it, you're generally going to take that. Then, as the summer came along and some of the restrictions started to ease, people started to go back to asking for agent guided tours, which again that's unusual. That's you don't normally go back to the in-person salesperson enabled tour if you've got the opportunity to do it yourself. So there's a few possible reasons for that. One is that people have been knocked down for a couple of months, and they were just into the idea of doing stuff with people again. Like they've been sort of starved of human contact and like the idea of doing an in-person tour. It's also possible that the leasing conversation was kind of influencing prospects that way, but for whatever reason, people, it was clear that people were kind of relevant to this process, right? Another thing that's interesting is people were very surprised at how successful virtual tours were, the kind of selfie tours that people were doing, because it sort of unleashed this creativity in the leasing teams. If people were finding ways to shoot videos, very engaging videos of themselves walking around units, and that seemed to be very successful. It seemed to be converting really well. And again, that's something that really involves a human doing it. It's something that's not easy to automate out of business. So for those reasons, it just felt to us like people made a bit of a comeback in the leasing process in the last year.
Okay. I mean, I'm wondering if part of that is because when someone's making a decision on where they want to live, they want that interactive feedback with somebody where they want to hear all the great amenities and things like that you can provide through AI, but it's not that same touchy-feely type of things. Do you think that has something to do with it?
I do. I think generally there's a market for everything. Like, there's definitely people who would, if there's a way to do this without ever meeting a person, then that's what I want.
That's
like,
true.
And that's true of a growing number of people. I mean, I think it's helpful to think about it in terms of people doing the vast majority of their work, their research work online, and interacting with a robot like gets you most of the way there. But still, there's some high touch, event that I really want to make my final decision. Mm-hmm. So I do I do think there's obviously a place for the human in this as well. And so I think now people are much more thinking about what are the right tasks to focus the people on who are involved in this interaction. Like, you don't need a person to be picking up the phone to read out the pet policy 10 times a day, right? You don't need that at all. Lead follow up is something that's notoriously difficult to get people to do really well, but it's extremely easy to get a robot to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's lots of areas of this that are much better done by the technology than the people. But the people is still a really important element. And I think people are thinking more about, right, what's the right blend, what's the right focus for the people that we have in the property, rather than, okay, how do we automate people out of some of these tasks and some of these roles?
Did you find anybody that you spoke with and interviewed for the report that thought that AI would totally replace the individuals, the personal touch in any time in the near future?
Not totally replace it. I mean, there are examples of companies that have substantially reduced it. So companies that have density of properties within particular submarkets are doing things like sharing leasing agents between properties. I suspect that's much closer to what the model of the future will look like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this story is definitely not all told so far. Leasing will change a lot over the next couple of years, and I suspect it will go more to a model where your resources are not allocated to individual properties. Resources are allocated wherever they need to be. The technology really enables that. That, if you think about it, that makes the role of being a leasing agent better, right? You're focused on the selling part of it rather than the picking up the phone and answering,
right,
and typing emails to people and that kind of thing. So those are I suspect that's where this will go. There are certainly already companies that are making headway doing that.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna come back with a lot more from the report right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we're back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of what 20 senior multifamily executives say about how COVID will change the industry. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today in the studio is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and an expert on revenue management and marketing, Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing management company, consistently excellent. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Dom, when you sent me a link to the report, and by the way, I will put a link on our website at multifamilyradio.com for this specific episode page that anybody who would like to click on it can do so and take it directly to the report. But one of the things about the next topic that we're going to discuss in the report, the headline in it is "Moving Fast and Breaking Stuff Work Pretty Well." I think that's a great headline, but tell us what that means.
Yeah, so anyone who's been involved in multifamily operations and technology over the last year will be familiar with the sensation of having to scramble to get stuff done. Mm-hmm. The standout examples, if we think about corporate, you know, the sort of management layer of multifamily, people had to get things like Office 365 or Microsoft Teams or basically the infrastructure in place to do work from home, sort of collaborative work that had to be done quickly. You know, I've seen sessions at Optech about this where people lay out the project plans that typically go on for a year or something mm-hmm. like this, and it had to get done in a few weeks mm-hmm. here. So we know that initiatives like that had to take place at a much faster pace than people are normally comfortable with. The really obvious example at property level was self-show. Self-show was a big, the previous 2 years of 20 for 20, we talked a lot about self-show and the industry's sort of progress towards it, but now all of a sudden you've got to get the whole thing done in 2 weeks.
Right.
So that led to led to some innovative and very urgent work that had to get done. And the thing that's interesting when we talk to people about this is that everything worked pretty well. So, you know, you didn't get to get a test and rollout plan together with all the change management provisions, and you know, everybody had to figure out how to get the 70% solution out there as quickly as they could.
Right.
And that's interesting because a few of the people that we spoke to, maybe even half of the people that we spoke to, just felt that this had sort of changed the mindset a little bit on how they want to do projects. If we look at IT, we have the agile methodology, which tends to get you to just make the minimum viable product as quickly as you can, and then iterate to get it to the place where you want it. It's a similar mindset that you see coming into various aspects of technology and operations in multifamily now. So people are, we it's a people business. Like, rollouts can be complicated. We tend to want to manage the risk of the rollout, which makes us prepare, you know, assiduously for implementation projects. Well, now people are a little bit more like, if there's a 70% solution that we think will work, let's get it out there, and then we can figure out the 30% after that. there's a much stronger emphasis on speed to market. Like, there's mm-hmm. a benefit to getting this stuff done quickly that kind of maybe counterbalances the need to de-risk everything.
Yeah, and it's just amazing how something like the pandemic just kind of pulled back the curtain on that. I know that, you know, larger operators were, you know, suffering from, you know, analysis paralysis before the pandemic hit, where they would want to look at rolling something out, and it took, you know, who knows, years for them to analyze it, to test it in a one or two markets or something like that, and then they would make a decision either to scrap it or to roll it out. But yes, with the pandemic, as your report showed, that people had no choice and they had to move, and so what the report showed is that people are willing to not mitigate every risk that's out there, get it out there, and make sure that it's going to happen. One of the things that I saw in the report was a quote that you had I'm assuming from one of the people you interviewed that said, it shifted our focus towards breaking down barriers to find better mousetraps.
Yeah, well, that was one of the biggest platforms that we spoke to, and there, the particular thing was they'd had to work across conventional silos in their organization, like parts of the organization that don't normally work fluidly together, you know, which you often find in big organizations. Well, they'd had to break down those silos very quickly in order just to get stuff done. And the fact that, you know, the model seemed to work means that they now want to go break other stuff and figure out, all right, what other efficiencies right. can we drive? What, particularly, what kind of customer experience benefits can we get from working more fluidly across what we conventionally think of as silos in our organization?
Yeah, let's move to the next part of the report, which is emerging digital transformation mindset. What is that? What did you find with that?
Yeah, that's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? But yeah. let me explain a bit about what we meant. So if we talk about that idea of just changing some things about the way that we think about implementation, one thing that really stood out to us was that people are talking about leasing related technologies in a different way. Like, leasing has been a big topic through all of the years that we've done 20 for 20. But the thing that's different about the way that people are talking about it this year, typically in multifamily, we tend to talk about technology in terms of, we're rolling this system out, or we're rolling this app out, or, you know, we tend to think about it in terms of bits of technology that we're going to implement, and it's, you know, we evaluate, we do the beauty contest on different vendors, we pick the one we're going to go with, and we roll it out. Well, when we look at leasing, people are not talking about it that way. The thing that really seems to have changed is that because everyone had to do self-show, most people had to roll it out in a very low-tech environment. You know, we talk about the key on a stick environment. That was the way that people had to do it. It means that people have now had all this experience of, right, how do I organize getting people into my building? How do I book the tour? Like, what constitutes a good self-guided tour? What do I have to do with the unit to keep this going through a busy day? How do I coordinate follow-up? They're sort of thinking about all of the steps of a self-serve leasing process. Mm-hmm. Like, people know way more now than they did a year ago about how to manage that. And the thing that is fascinating to us is they're looking at this as a process thing. They're not looking at it as a technology thing. And so when we say digital transformation mindset, I mean, I'm one of those people that definitely rolls his eyes when I hear people talk about digital transformation in multifamily. It doesn't really feel like it fully belongs in the real estate industry. But the way that people are talking about this sounds like the way that, for example, a legacy retailer would think about, dealing with competition from online, like, rivals, right? They're thinking about this in terms of what parts of this should be done by technology and which parts shouldn't, which parts of this are obsolete and which parts aren't. And people are, when they talk about leasing, you really get this impression of an end-to-end process that they're thinking of, where they're much more thinking about, right, what bits of technology do we need to plug into this process that we now know that we want to deliver to our prospects, which is an interesting change.
One of the things in the report was that bulk internet is on several 2021 to-do list. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So again, we didn't expect to find that, but it seems like a lot of people are doing this. It seems like there's a combination of more compelling commercial terms, but also people are recognizing that there are more and more problems to which bulk internet is a good solution in mm-hmm. their communities, that it's finally getting them over the hump. But bulk internet is kind of a pain because you have to administer it. You're now the internet service provider of your residence, which has this administrative burden to it, but you can charge for it, yeah. right? So it's the question of whether or not you want to make that, take on that responsibility to capitalize on that revenue stream. And if you think about the amount of IoT stuff there is in Internet of Things stuff there is in buildings right now, and how you don't have universally good cell coverage across communities, bulk internet seems to make more sense to people now. And a lot of people told us that they were actively planning to do it.
I was going to say, we've had some guests on the show where the topic was 5G technology, and one of the things that they said specifically for multifamily is that 5G is different technology than 4G, where it doesn't have the ability to penetrate through windows as easily or walls as easily, so that in order to offer 5G, which the residents are going to demand mm-hmm. that they have 5G coverage, that they're going to have to invest in repeater type devices throughout the property. But that also gives them a chance to be the internet provider and to be able to charge for it. So that particular company is really looking at trying to create revenue streams for properties and so forth.
I was going to say, I can certainly speak to that experience. So Houston, of course, was one of the earliest cities for 5G, yeah. right? And so I've had it in my house for more than a year, and seeing the guy walk around trying to find where the signal is. So all of the buildings in Houston have energy saving glass, which means it can't get through the windows,
right?
So that is an issue. I mean, I think my sense is that companies are kind of circumventing it by just providing bulk internet, like whether it's 5G or not is a separate matter. But just providing good internet, charging money for it, and solving some of your IoT problems seems like a project that people are looking to bite off right now.
All right. Well, we're going to take our break right here. We're going to be back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM. COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. And today we're discussing the topic of what 20 senior multifamily executives say about how COVID will change the industry. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today in the studio is a longtime multifamily industry veteran and an expert on revenue management and marketing, Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. I do want to take a moment and let our supplier partner listeners know, if you're a supplier partner to the multifamily industry, we have some very unique sponsorships available for the Multifamily Matters radio show. Reach out to us through our website to learn more at multifamilyradio.com. Dom, we were talking in the last segment. You'd mentioned self-show. Tell us a little bit more about what you found about self-show.
Yeah, that was that's kind of central to the idea of people thinking about this more like a process than a technology. Because self-show, you know, there's a variety of self-show technology out there. Everybody had to do self-show in one way or another, but it's not. But while self-show became ubiquitous, self-show technology did not. Right, so that tells us something kind of interesting. The industry doesn't look to us at all like it's reaching for an app to solve that particular problem. It's looking at the bits of technology it needs to support a really good process. So it seems to me that it's yet another reason why really, really good access control is a higher and higher priority for multifamily communities. Figuring out that piece where I get somebody into a property, you know, where we think about what it's like to go tour a property if I have to start a tour with a lockbox versus if I walk in with a code and mm-hmm. I can just get through all of the doors that I need to, and you know, what that feels like for a tour, that particular aspect of it is super important. But the idea of needing a technology that sort of curates the tour, that manages the tour, where I have to download an app onto my phone and it directs me around the property, it's less clear to us that that's something that most people will end up doing. Just generally, we talked way back at the beginning of the conversation about how people, particularly some of the larger companies, are trying to move maybe quicker than their technology vendors are. Mm-hmm. How you deal with leasing in an environment where lots and lots of people are going to be self-showing in your business is probably the biggest driver of that technology. Like if I know that I don't need as many leasing agents to do as many accompanied tours as I did, that means I want to look at different ways to organize. Like maybe I want to start centralizing my leasing operations in the way that example that we talked about earlier. That has technology implications to it, which means that people are sort of focusing on that part of it. So self-show, you really need to sort of look at it in the context of overall, how is leasing going to work 2, 3, 4 years from now?
Okay. One of the things in the report that, and I know you talked to the people you interviewed about this, is renewals. Mm. Talk a little bit about renewals. I know that was an important part of the industry and making sure that was kept intact.
Yeah. And a great point that really came from one example that really resonated with us. So we're a revenue management company. So we are aware that you know, more than half of your revenue doesn't come from the new rents, the new leases that you sign. It comes from the people already in your building. Mm-hmm. Yet it's always been a sort of bug that all of the multifamily technology processes, the way that we teach sales, like all of the stuff is very heavily stacked towards new leases. Mm-hmm. Like how do you get new people in the door? How do you close them? Like how do you get price the lease optimally? So there's always been too much of a focus on new rents relative to renewals, in our view. And one example that just fascinated us, this came from, this is about a 15,000 unit portfolio, in the Midwest, relatively young, fast growing company, didn't have maybe the depth of revenue management expertise that like a bigger, more mature company would. And their reaction to lockdown was to implement a daily management stand-up that was just about renewals. So if you think about what that entails, like the chief executive, the COO, all of the regionals, like everyone was on a call every day. And the subject of that call was, what can we do today to avoid attrition. Mm. Now, that's an extreme reaction to this, right? That's a lot of time and a lot of focus to put on one thing. But the fact that a company, they felt they did really well by doing that, and the fact that they chose that as the thing that they really wanted to focus on, let's just close the back door firmly shut, let's not lose anybody, really resonated with us because, you know, had they been a more mature company with deeper experience in an area like revenue management, maybe they would not have prioritized that as much, and maybe it is the right priority for people to focus on. So we came to see that story as a little bit of a parable, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know that, well, we don't know, we can speculate that as we move into leasing season 2021, like, it's quite possible that 2020 renewals really end up being a 2021 problem, because lots of people were kind of forced to stick around where they were a year ago, and now maybe they have more latitude to go look elsewhere. So it's an area that we would always counsel people to be super aware of.
Yeah, and I mean, what kind of response were you getting? Did people see that as a issue? I mean, obviously, you we're talking about the 20 people that you interviewed here, but obviously you were dealing with other clients throughout the year, and if you were counseling them on that, did that resonate with them? Did they understand that was something, as far as in 20, once the pandemic eases and people have more freedom, your back door could open back up again.
Exactly. Yeah. No. We saw a lot of people who were doing doing other things on this. Like, again, some of the more mature, bigger operators. This was part of a process that encompassed a bunch of other things. So, you know, it wasn't the singular focus that was for this particular company, but it was still a big focus for them. But there are lots of companies for whom, you know, when you sort of amp up the focus on renewals, it just really pays dividends, which obviously mm-hmm. suggests that, you know, there's an opportunity for lots of companies to do this. We're just completing a series that we've done for a vendor partner, actually, of simply teaching their customers renewal negotiation skills, right? Mm-hmm. Just how do you overcome renewal objections? Again, in anticipation that people are going to have far more options this year than they did last year. You're going to have to do more work to convince them to stay in your property rather than go to the shiny new property a few blocks away, right? Mm-hmm. We should anticipate that. And this particular course that we've done on handling renewal objections has just been hugely oversubscribed. We've got hundreds of people showing up to each thing. So I think it doesn't take much of a push to get people to think that, okay, this is a really big priority. It's something that I should be really focusing on. But you still need a little bit more push to get people there.
Yeah. You know, every year we have you on and Donald, if he's available to discuss the report. I think it's a great report. I always learn a lot, and I know our listeners do as well. I want to transition into something else, and obviously I want you to talk a little bit about what D2 Demand Solutions does. But I wanted to ask you, your background and Donald's background both come from the hospitality industry, and revenue management really started in that industry. Tell us a little bit about kind of the history of revenue management and how it started in hospitality and moved over into multifamily.
Yeah, it's funny actually. Donald and I used to work for the same company back in the 90s, which dates us both. Donald's background is more in the travel sector. Mm-hmm. Mine was in travel with a higher emphasis on hospitality. Like, I worked for mm-hmm. a couple of hotel companies earlier in my career, and basically the quick version is that in, I think it was 1978, the Carter administration deregulated airlines. As soon as airlines were deregulated, that meant that they had to compete with one another in a way that they hadn't done before, which meant that they started figuring out these strategies for differentiating price on different flights. Like, that was how revenue management got its start back in mm-hmm. the late 70s. Sort of early 80s, Marriott starts to look at what American Airlines and the others have done and says, well, hang on, we have a fixed capacity of rooms and reservations based industry, and we have the opportunity to price discriminate as well. So let's figure out how to run our hotels in this way. So that means they get into this business of forecasting demand and figuring out what my optimal blend of prices is. So, you know, that's really sort of, I think, early to mid 80s. And then by the early 90s, you've got commercial software vendors that are selling systems that do a similar thing to individual hotels. So mm-hmm. by the sort of mid 90s, revenue management was pretty well ingrained in the hotel industry. And along the way, you've got companies like rental car, air cargo, like other industries that are adopting revenue management technologies. And then in the sort of late 90s, Archstone, as I understand it, the then chief executive of Archstone, wants to figure out how to do what Marriott's doing in a multifamily portfolio. Mm-hmm. And so that kicks off this project, which was done with a company called Talus Solutions that Donald and I both work for, and leads to this highly successful project for Archstone. At some point along the way, YieldStar comes along, and so you have competing products in the multifamily market. And really through the mid-noughties up to now, you've had this mass adoption in multifamily of revenue management, which has created this whole sort of cadre of professionals who specialize in that across the industry. And that's a large part of what keeps us busy.
Yeah. So tell us real quick. We've got about a minute left about D2 and what you guys specifically do for your clients.
Yeah. So we're a consulting firm. There are about nine of us at the moment. We specialize in revenue management and stuff that relates to it, and increasingly in property technology. So we do. In revenue management terms, we run revenue management departments for people. We show them how to staff them. We help them pick technology. In some cases, we've even built technology for them. So basically, everything to do with revenue management, we do. And increasingly, partly through 20 for 20, but just generally through the fact that we understand the technology environment in multifamily really well, companies hire us to do things like advise them on technology strategy. Vendors hire us to help them understand how to bring their products to market. Just that whole prop tech technology environment, and really the stuff that helps companies make more multifamily companies make more revenue, is really the area where we work.
All right, website, and how would someone get in touch with you if they need to?
Oh, thank you. Well, it's d2demand.com. And if they want to see 20 for 20, I know you'll put a link on the site. It's d2demand.com/20for20, number 24, number 20. Well, there's a contact us form on there. You can reach me on Twitter at Don Beveridge.
All right, great. Always a pleasure to have you. I look forward to having you on again, and also to get Donald back on when he can make it too. We are going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.